Today is the last Sunday in ordinary time after Epiphany. I want to thank Father Phil for giving me the opportunity to preach today and the chance to dig a little deeper into Mark's story of the Transfiguration. Biblical scholars tell us that the Transfiguration is a pivotal story in Mark's Gospel. So I want to go back a few weeks to Epiphany to see just what we are pivoting from. Mark doesn't give us the story of Epiphany. This year we heard the tale from Matthew. A brilliant light appeared in the night sky, so dazzling and surprising in its appearance that sages far away saw it and became curious. Perhaps more than curious. Perhaps they had hope in this new king whose birth the star announced. Perhaps they heard the star whisper, "Follow me." And they did follow this new light to Bethlehem and found a baby named Jesus. Mark's Gospel opens with the adult baptism of Jesus and that vivid image of the heavens torn apart and the Spirit descending like a dove on Jesus. People watching might have missed the rapid dove-like movement of the Spirit while they were talking to their neighbor or watching the river or checking their cell phones, but it's hard to miss the heavens being torn apart. In my mind, I see this action as one of sudden light, of brightness, where before there was only blue, a breaking into the world of something extraordinary, a sudden brightness, brighter than daylight, something to notice, something to pay attention to. Yet Mark doesn't tell us that anyone but Jesus noticed or heard the voice from heaven proclaiming Jesus as the beloved Son. Except for the odd and brilliant spectacle of the heavens, Jesus appears to those around him as another freshly baptized, dripping Galilean. So we, the listeners of these stories, and three wandering wise men, and demons of the dark, and Jesus, it's we who know he is the Son of God, the Messiah, the King of heaven and earth. But nobody else in the story is aware. There's something special about him, there's no doubt about that. And crowds come to him, and religious leaders challenge him, and fishermen follow him. But they are not sure who he really is. Some think he might be one of the honored prophets. Others think he is a clever debater, a gifted healer, maybe even a revolutionary. But no one really knows. And then he goes on a hike up a mountain with Peter, James, and John. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter, James, and John are terrified, as anyone with sense would be at witnessing that unearthly light. They are seeing the Son of God, chatting with Moses, the giver of the law, and the legendary prophet Elijah. And if this isn't enough, a cloud overshadowed them. And from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my Son, the Beloved. Listen to him." And this is the pivot in Mark's Gospel. The witnessed public unveiling of Jesus, beloved Son of God. The Jesus who is the true light, who who enlightens everyone, who speaks of and for God in the world after Moses and Elijah have faded from the mountaintop. It is the merging of the temporal and the divine, of heaven and earth connecting, as it had at creation and will forevermore. As a little girl growing up in San Diego, I managed one day to capture a caterpillar. After letting its many sticky little legs crawl up and down my arm, I put it in an old mayonnaise jar with a branch from its tree and a handful of leaves. My dad helped me punch some holes in the lid, and I set my new friend on the shady backyard picnic table. Every day, with curious delight, I offered fresh leaves and watched the caterpillar crawl around on the branch and munch its meals. There came a day when, instead of the many-legged wonder, there was a small cocoon hanging from the stick, unrecognizable as my caterpillar. As children sometimes do, I lost interest in the cocoon that didn't move and forgot to put the lid back on the jar. So when I went back a week or so later, I found the cocoon torn open and the empty jar. My mom explained that my caterpillar had changed, had turned into a black butterfly with blue spots on its wings and white edges, and had flown away to have a happy butterfly life. I have seen my butterfly many times in many places, and to this day, I look at swallowtail butterflies with wonder at the experience of metamorphosis I almost witnessed so long ago. In biology, metamorphosis is the term describing the change of a creature into its adult or mature form, that form by which they're able to reproduce, to do their work in the world, to be recognized as what they are. This word metamorphosis is derived from the Greek word in our gospel reading today, that word we translate as transfiguration. And perhaps the metamorphosis of Jesus would indeed not be complete until his resurrection, and the word transfigured is a better choice for the reading today. As Mark reminds us in his secretive fashion, Jesus tells Peter, James, and John not to tell anyone of his transfiguration until after the Son of Man has risen from the dead, until he has become more fully what he has always been, the saving, loving gift of light to the world. This transfiguration scene is indeed a pivotal point in the gospel narrative and is also a pivotal point in each of our lives. Can you recall the day you recognized Jesus as the light of the world? Were you on a mountaintop under a dark winter sky? When was your epiphany? That pivotal place where heaven met earth and you knew Jesus, not only in the gospel stories, but as the living light of God's love present in your heart. The good news is that this light of Christ is a non-extinguishable resource. It will not burn out like our sun in another million years. It is not a commodity that we can turn off and on with a switch or something we pay to be able to use. It is a light given as gift. It is meant to be used to transform and transfigure, and it is present in our hearts in even the darkest of times, whether we are able to remember or envision it or not. The big question for us is, what do we do with this light? Peter wanted to build tents to house the transfigured Jesus and the giver of the law, Moses, and the prophet Elijah that stood at Jesus' sides. Rather like my childhood caterpillar in a jar, to confine it, hold it, and keep it for one's own delight. This light is not meant for only one place, like a church building or a Bible. It is meant to be in the world. This light is abundant and cannot be confined or kept to ourselves. Its very nature is so abundant that the more we share, the more we let it shine through us into the world, the more there is. This brilliant, dazzling light came into the world at the world's creation. It transfigured the face of Moses on the mountaintop, and it transfigured the face of Jesus on a different mountain at a different time and place. It is the light by which the demons, so used to darkness, are able to recognize Jesus when the ordinary people could not. And the light of Christ has the power to transform each of us if we dare to see, feel, share, and follow.